Everybody, first I'd like to thank organizer to bring us together. Also personally, I'm very excited to come back to PI after 8 or 9 years. You know, I remember, you know, the PI is certainly a great time to me to be here. And today I'd like to talk about symmetry plotted topological orders more. The talk is more kind of the complementary to the Steve's first talk today, but you know, try to somehow tackle from different perspective. So let me first somehow mention, you know, of course, the one of the theme of this conference is what is resource for quantum computing. And from the early days, people speculated, you know, a lot of things. But in the context of the measurement-based computation, since we can only use entanglement and the local measurement and classical communication, in this framework, you can make this question in a kind of the more concrete way, so that you can ask what is entanglement resource useful for measurement-based computation, so what kind of the entanglement. And I can somehow show you very quick history of the how we can find a lot of the resource states, starting from the cluster state robot discovered. And the first somehow we look at the graph state or so-called stabilizer state. They are joint eigens to the Pauli operators. And from early days, you know, in this framework, we can notice that the entanglement is resource, and even you can, you know, quantify, you know, what kind of the entanglement you need using entanglement monotones. So that we, you know, for example, they already proposed to characterize the resource using entangled monotones, although these quantities are very hard to compute in particular. So you can probably compute for graph state, but in general, it's very hard to compute. You know, so it's these quantities are related to the essentially complexity, you know, in graph theory, for example. And then later, you know, people figure out, for example, David Gross and Isaac, you know, they extended this framework to the tensor network. And also for example, the Tsuchi Wei and Robert and myself also argued that even we can find a resource state in the ground state of two-body Hamiltonian. And you know, recent progress is, for example, if you know the AKT state, this is precursor of the symmetry protected topological orders. And there has been a lot of progress looking at the SPTO in general, and that's the subject I like to talk about. And the new thing I remember, you know, the tradition of the PI is the use, you know, the hockey stick. So the progress we have along this line is essentially the Robert Lausendorf group discovered how we can use whole phase of SPTO for the sake of the measurement-based computation. So this is kind of the very quick history in the universal resource state of the measurement-based computation. And the reason I somehow show up is actually, you know, there are a lot of heroes, you know, in this room, so I just honor the progress. Another motivation in particular I like to highlight is slightly different in this conference. So nature isn't classical is a famous quote by Feynman, but apparently nature has own way to make computation robust. That's kind of the hint that Steve mentioned today. Of course, we love quantum error correction. This is a theoretical foundation to have fault tolerant quantum computation. And these are kind of the standard property of the error correction. Of course, under standard assumption of the local error, and for example, Markovianity, you know, we can, you know, deal with, you know, few arbitrary local error. And usually the theoretical construction is we somehow discretize Pauli errors, and the cause are typically stabilizer subspace, and we have to use kind of the magic state or the non-Clifford resource to achieve universal fault tolerant computation. And another observation is, in the conventional sense, the error correction, has to stay very close to your target pure state computation, so to say. So you have the ideal unitary dynamics, and you try to, follow this dynamics as much as possible by somehow doing error correction and getting rid of the entropy or uncertainty of state. And of course, there, there are a lot of progress, you know, in these assumptions and those properties. We have a lot of the nice scores, and those also we have a lot of new way to decode, but these are kind of the fundamental, you know, principle of the error correction. And one thing I like to bring up here is, of course, the, you know, nowadays we see a lot of the prototype of the quantum computing device, but they still the, you know, the devices, you know, are limited in the sense that, of course, they have limited number of qubit and gates and gate fidelity, but also importantly, these devices may not somehow follow assumption you expect in formal theory. For example, if you look at the ion traps, you know, they have the all-to-all coupling using phonon mode, and they may not somehow follow the standard locality assumption of the error, for example, if you like to, in particular, parallelize gate. And for example, if you look at the transmon qubit on superconducting device, the current limitation is actually so-called 1 over F noise. Okay, so the Markovian noise assumption is not guaranteed, and we don't know how well the error correction helps us. Probably it helps, but you know, at this stage, it might be interesting to look at the kind of complementary idea to support error correction. So the subject I like to talk today is on the right column. So we call this is computation in a phase of matter, and they come with different property. First thing, that this computation is robust against only two symmetric errors. So that's, for example, Steve mentioned, and in this talk, you can only, well, you can somehow assume that I'm talking about X error, for example, because symmetry operators are pretty much made by X operators, so these errors doesn't, you know, they cause problem in computation. So in this sense, it's similar to the idea of decoherence-free subspace, if you know it. Although somehow, you know, the difference to the decoherence-free subspace is the, for our case, it's more natural to encode a lot of qubit while respecting symmetry in the framework of the phase of matter. So the second property is the, you know, we like to consider whole phase of, you know, particular somehow matter in the sense that the, we don't care which ground state we have in particular, but the goal is we like to somehow use all state, you know, the, in a way it's independent of the particular state you have. And the hope is we know that the, typically if you look at the ground state of the, you know, the particular Hamiltonian with common symmetry, they share some macroscopic features. So we like to take advantage of these macroscopic features, you know, for computation ideally. And technically also these ground states are not necessarily stabilizer states. So in this framework, we somehow go beyond the conventional analysis based on the stabilizer homomorphies. And the last point I like to make is, as I already kind of mentioned, the computation is independent of the state you have. Also, technically, the overhead differs. So if you have different state, and typically the state I'm going to consider the somehow the ground state in the gap phase, so that they have exponentially decaying two-point correlation function. So the two-point correlation functions that differ in ground state, but as long as you take the overhead large enough, essentially all state behave in the same manner so that you can do computation in the same way. And this already suggests, actually, you can also deal with mixed state as long as you have mixture of these states. You don't have to really know parameter, you know, in the phase. So these are complementary features. And the progress we have along this computation in a computation phase of matter is, the, you know, this year we kind of figure out how we can do universal measurement-based computation in two-dimensional phase of matter, and you know, the future direction might be, you know, also we like to somehow develop towards fault tolerance. Do you have any question in this slide? That's kind of my motivation of the talk. Is everything clear? Okay, please feel free to ask me if you have question. So today I like to little bit spend the explaining the what is symmetry protected topological order. So in this talk, we pretty much focus on the SPTO on the lattice made by a bunch of qubit. So the symmetry is the, well, you know, the essentially we somehow look at the symmetry made by abelian group. Typically, you know, for the qubit, we consider the Z2 symmetry. Namely, this is Ising type symmetry. State is invariant when you somehow exchange 0 and 1. And we call the global symmetry if it acts on a, you know, the on-site manner, so that you have symmetry operations U of Z, and if you act this symmetry, every fair state is invariant, so that's somehow the first thing you can imagine. And we can define SPT using global symmetry. And the, in this context, of course, if you remember cluster set Hamiltonian, if you apply X operator everywhere, the cluster set is actually invariant. And the, we like to somehow take advantage of this X time symmetry for the measurement-based computation. And the, this comes with a little bit of the difference from the conventional measurement-based computation. So the, you might think the measurement-based computation is equivalent to standard quantum circuit picture. But the, if you can only somehow the, do computation using X-type symmetry, namely X-type measurement, you cannot delete any qubit. Usually you have to use the Z measurement to delete qubit from cluster set. So the, this is more, you know, I kind of write down the non-network measurement-based computation because we cannot somehow the, delete the qubit to map to quantum circuit. So the all are entangled and you have to somehow deal with the natural lattice structure to do computation. So that's kind of the new subject, but the point is still we can somehow do measurement-based computation without the Z measurement. So the, and we consider these models as topological because essentially it comes with the, well, you know, the topological feature. So if we consider periodic boundary condition, the ground state is unique. Okay, and for simplicity here, I consider one-dimensional model, and you probably know that there is no topological order in 1D, but if we consider symmetry, we can define essentially the counterpart, which is SPTO. So the whole cluster set Hamiltonian, we consider some of the old terms of stabilizers to define Hamiltonian, and the, as I already said, that the, if you apply X operator everywhere, the state, the ground state is invariant. And if you look more carefully, actually you can find two copies of Z2 symmetry. One is somehow applying the X only even side, and the other is you apply X operator only odd side. And so the, actually you have two copies of the Z2 symmetry, and this is sufficient, and actually necessary to define the SPTO. So the smallest somehow symmetry to define SPTO order in 1D is Z2 cross Z2, and that's the essentially symmetry. And as Steve emphasized, if you have the topological model, there's somehow correspondence between bulk and boundary. So the, if we consider open boundary condition, and so in this example, I rather somehow the cut chain and I consider infinitely, you know, the kind of half chain, which somehow continue to the infinity. And if and mathematically, what we do is we somehow drop one term from Hamiltonian, okay? And in this case, in the open boundary condition, we see degeneracy at the boundary. And the, of course, if you know the stabilizer code, that's obvious. And the, in particular, we can somehow define logical qubit related to the boundary this way, and they are related to the essentially two operator at the boundary. And if you remember the stabilizers, actually you know, they are related to the two symmetry we are talking about. So if you use the stabilizer condition, this turn to approximately the X operator at the even side, and this becomes actually the X operator at the, sorry, you know, this becomes the X operator at the odd side, and this becomes the X at the even side. So these are essentially related to the symmetry we defined. And the, this is kind of the, also the, as I said, the bulk boundary correspondence we can use in measurement-based computation. So the, we encode information at the boundary, and using entanglement in the bulk, we kind of process computation.
Akmas, I have a question. Yeah, sorry, I'm missing something. So in these equations you wrote down in the bottom left corner, so X logical and Z logical, they still are supposed to anti-commute.
Yes.
But on the right, they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on?
That's really an excellent question, Anda. So that's the reason I kind of a little bit finesse this relation. So the, of course, technically, you know, if you cut the chain, you have the boundary here. So that somehow gives you anti-commutation relation, but a little bit finesse to emphasize rather somehow these operators are related to the two symmetry we are talking about. So that you are absolutely right, but the point is just to emphasize the role of symmetry. Yes. Thank you for, you know, careful observation. Other questions? And the essentially, we know how we can somehow analyze the measurement-based computation on, you know, tensor network as we do. So the I don't explain in detail, you know, the in this slide, but the, you can write down the, you know, of course, the cluster state using tensors, and these are kind of the standard kind of the gadget we can use. So this is kind of the GHZ type or the three-way delta function. This is Hadamard, and these are kind of the control phase gate. And when you have the one-dimensional cluster state, you know, so you can somehow look this state, you know, the well, you know, we turn the 90 degree, and you notice that in later I use a lot of the somehow tensor made this form. So the, you know, the cluster state, 1D cluster state comes with the three indices tensor, and two indices correspond to the indices in the direction of the virtual space. So if you consider this is matrix product set, essentially this is the direction you like to contract the matrices. And this wiggle line corresponds to the degree of the physical degree, which you can do measurement with any somehow physical action only. And the point of the cluster state is, for example, this every tensor has particular property. Okay, so the, instead of the writing stabilizer in this notation, you know there are certain rules for this tensor. You know, I don't really derive this condition, but you can really check, you know, that this tensor is made by the composition of the two tensors, and that's, you know, we have to use. And then you can easily show that, for example, if you measure the first qubit in x direction, this somehow gives you effectively the teleportation together with the additional gate operation. So that's how we do measurement-based computation. And the, it turns out the, essentially for 1D SPTO, the way you somehow the check whether state is the non-trivially somehow the ordered or not is the given by you look at the representation at the boundary. I don't explain in detail that this somehow a concept here. The first somehow this, you know, this analysis made by the matrix product state. And the point is the, if you have non-trivial SPTO order, you will get the projective representation at the boundary. And this essentially corresponds to the Pauli operator for the case of the Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. And that's kind of another way to see why we have the qubit at the boundary. And the, you know, that's kind of the, you know, the understanding of the formal definition of the SPTO. And if you like to define a phase of matter for SPTO, namely you like to define an equivalent class of the ground state, you can somehow use the constant depth local circuit. In a way, somehow we define topological orders. So the, this definition is parallel to the topological order, only the difference is we have additional symmetry constraint. So that we consider two states belong to the same phase as far as two ground states are connected by the symmetric local unitary, namely they are connected by the symmetric constant depth quantum circuit. And the, we can show that, for example, cluster state, the, you cannot bring to the trivial product state while respecting symmetry. So that is why cluster state is 1D SPTO. And the for 1D case, yes. Yes.
I'm a bit confused by this definition. Why do we require each U satisfy that is invalid under the operation instead of requiring the whole layer?
Oh, I see. In principle, you can define the, you know, unitary over whole layer, but the important point is the, still you have to define locality in the system. Okay, so the point is if you have the topological orders, you have to establish long range order. Okay, and the point is in order to establish long range order, you know, it takes depth to make it. Okay, so the essential cluster state is long range ordered, which is separate from the product state. And it doesn't have to be two body unitary, but essentially this every unitary should somehow commute with the symmetry operator. So in my example, this is the essential X symmetry.
But my question is precisely why should every U commute with?
Well, that's sufficient, right? But I didn't really specify this U. U doesn't have to be two body. You know, it can be three body, but as long as this acts on only constant number of unitary, it's fine, and we require same condition.
But from a condition matter point of view, it seems I only require the whole, for example, the first of column, which has four of the U blocks, I only require four of them together to satisfy the
I think that's right. So I also include, you are saying that we don't need the other unitary?
No. Suppose I just look at the first column. If it's me, I will require the whole column to satisfy the solution, not each individual.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is if you somehow write down unitary over all the chain, this is global unitary.
Yeah.
But if you tautomerize your time evolution, you would exactly get something that's negative, for instance, right? Huh? If you tautomerize your adiabatic time evolution, you would exactly get a circuit where each local unitary would satisfy that condition, right? Because it's a Hamiltonian, which has local terms, all of which commute with a symmetry, and then if you do a tautomerization, you would get.
But usually in a Hamiltonian, if it's written in terms of a sum of many terms, each term doesn't respect the symmetry. Only the summation respects the symmetry.
Yeah.
So in this particular context, you can write down a very short text circuit that creates SPD phase and then not as a whole unitary, but commute with this global symmetry operator. Each individual element doesn't commute with that. So that's how you can distinguish. So if we impose, if we look at the whole level, we just simply don't have this separation.
Okay, how about we chat later? Well, you know, but to accept, and essentially, this is essentially parallel definition to topological orders, you know, with additional symmetry constraint. Okay, so if we look at the 2D state, we have more exotic symmetry. So that's somehow subject I like to talk today. So for two-dimensional cluster state, of course, the standard definition of the stabilizer is you have X and you have Z operator on the neighbors. Although I didn't really specify these symbols. And the first thing you notice is in the same way as the 1D cluster state, if you apply X operator everywhere, actually it's symmetry. You know, you can literally somehow see, you know, the start, you know, applying the stabilizer, and the goal is you like to cancel the operator as much as possible, okay, and like, you know, keep doing this, and essentially that's, you can easily confirm the global Z2 symmetry symmetry. However, you know, if you look at carefully, there are more. And before I talk about the more exotic symmetry, let me quickly go through how we can somehow use, you know, cluster phase of matter whole computation. So this is a subject the Lausendorf group somehow developed this year, and probably he will talk more on his talk later. But the goal is essentially if we have the two-dimensional state, but if we consider periodic boundary condition in two ways, we can map to the one-dimensional analysis, so to say. And it turns out the key is the very, the large symmetry. If we have the Z2 2 to the n subsystem symmetry, as I will define soon, essentially that's kind of the feature we need to do universal computation. And the intuitive reason is if you like to do the universal computation with the logical n qubit, symmetry should grow according to the number of the qubit you like to encode. So that's kind of what I'm hinting. Essentially, the symmetry you need is extensive in the number of qubits you like to encode. And the following few slides are a little bit technical, but the, in a kind of the nutshell, the, we can somehow describe any ground state in terms of the cluster state and the symmetric constant depth quantum circuit. So as I defined, any state is connected to the cluster state by symmetric constant depth circuit, and we can write down the, in principle, formal tensor description. And importantly, this is the constant depth circuit contains only polynomially few parameters. So we can exactly specify, and the, in the one-dimensional case, the, we analyze a lot the structure of the Z state. Okay, I always have this funny cartoon in the sense that this red layer corresponds to the cluster state, or in general, this is the renormalization fixed point, which is representative of the phase, and all other states are related with additional tensors. And the, I think this is a key result from Steve Bartlett group you know, a few years ago. And the, again, this is a little bit technical, but the message is if you assume symmetry, it determines common structure of tensors. So the, there is certain structure in tensor, and the point is the, we have the common structure in tensor, which is what we usually call the protected subspace, and we call the, this additional part as a junk space. And the idea of the computation in a phase of matter is we take advantage of this common structure of tensor to do the computation in a way it's the independent of the state. So the last slide I have here is essentially what, you know, the I like to mention, although I don't explain any technical detail here, is using almost global X measurement, we can do universal measurement-based computation regardless of state. And as we see later, in principle, the X measurement corresponds to the teleportation with additional kind of the gate operation. And in order to achieve universal computation, we have to slightly break symmetry, although it's a little bit technical detail. And the, you know, essentially the using certain structure, we can somehow do a gate operation, which only depends on the common property of phase. And the, these quantities can be related to the, for example, the, you know, essentially the cohomology of the class, for example, in this case. But the, I don't explain this slide, but the upshot is the, essentially, you know, in the following, we focus on the analysis of the tensor which is common to the state. Because we know how this, you know, the, this, the additional somehow layer can be treated in this framework. So the, you know, the, today's talk is about the, how we can really classify the tensor coming from the fixed point of the state. Do you have a question up to here? Okay. So the work I like to describe is the essential classification of the 2D cluster phases depending on the various sublattice symmetry. And this is joint work with Austin Daniel, who is the graduate student, and also the Rafael Alexander, who is postdoc at the University of New Mexico. So the, you know, the, there are actually many symmetry in 2D lattices. And the one thing we tried is if you look at the so-called Archimedean lattice, at least there are 11 Archimedean lattices. So the Archimedean lattices are vertex translative in the sense that the, if you look at the every vertex, essentially the structure, you know, near every vertex is same. And this labeling essentially tells you the structure. So the, this 4 to the 4 corresponds to square lattice because for every vertex you see the 4 neighboring squares. And for example, 3, 4, 6, 4 corresponds to, if you look at the neighbor, you know, you have the triangle, square, and hexagon, and square in this order, et cetera. So this is a way to somehow specify Archimedean lattices. And in the past, the people look at the square lattice and, for example, hexagon lattice, and they both can support the universal computation. And the goal of our analysis is look at other lattices. do you think all are universal or not? Well, you know, that's what we figure out. And also I would mention that in the context of the, of course, error correction, people look at a lot of the exotic structure, right? If you look at the very clever codes, it comes with a beautiful three-dimensional, you know, the lattice structure, and this is kind of the toy step to somehow see how somehow lattice structure affect, you know, in quantum computation. So the, now I like to elaborate a lot of symmetry you can find on 2D cluster state. First thing you can notice is the, what I call here the fractional symmetry. So the all somehow all vertex translative lattices are k-colorable. So the, these are obviously symmetry. So the, for 1D case, you know, I somehow mentioned that you have the even odd parity symmetry because the 1D line is 2-colorable, okay? But the, for the two-dimensional lattices, you know, the, in general, you know, you have, for example, the 3-colorable lattice. You know, so this triangular lattice is 3-colorable, and if you apply X only on one color, it's symmetry. And the, for example, the, this lattice has 2-colorable, and so we have 2 copies, etc. So if you have k-colorable lattice, we have z to the k copies of symmetry. And that's obvious natural symmetry. And it turns out this symmetry is not sufficient to define universal computation in a phase. So we have to look into more exotic symmetries. So the essential symmetry we like to talk about is what we call subsystem symmetry. So the concept is same for cluster set. You start with stabilizer, and you like to find the symmetry you know, in terms of the X operator. So you have to cancel the Z operator. And the, typically in this analysis, we consider the double periodic boundary condition. And but for the sake of the presentation, I somehow characterize one direction is I call circumference. This is the shorter distance of torus. And this is the direction we encode the qubit. Okay, so this, the vertical direction corresponds to the essential space direction, and the time direction corresponds to the qubit made by the capital N, and typically this time direction is much longer in general, okay? And the, in principle, given lattice, you can kind of stare at lattice and you can figure out what would be symmetry. And the characteristic of the subsystem symmetry is you have extensive number of symmetry. So the N is again circumference of the torus here. And the, this is just one pattern of the X. We will, you know, the, see a lot of pattern later. But you know, the, you have the extensively many such copies because you can somehow slide down this pattern one by one. Okay, so if you increase the circumference N, naturally the number of independent generator for this in subsystem symmetry increases. So that's the difference to the previous fractional symmetry. And the, soon we will see three kinds of subsystem symmetry depending on the lattice structure. And one more symmetry we encounter is so-called one-form symmetry, which appears in the Steve's talk. But you know, here we only look at the 2D case. But the one-form symmetry is different from subsystem symmetry in the sense that, again, you know, the, for example, if you look at the so-called Kagome lattice, if you apply X on the hexagon, you can, you know, convince yourself that this is symmetry. But the difference is that this symmetry is deformable in the sense that, of course, this is symmetry, but you can somehow deform this symmetry by somehow the appending another symmetry, and you can somehow make the big closed loop here. So the, although somehow this symmetry is also extensive in the number of the circumference, but the, compared to the previous examples, this symmetry has different role. And that's somehow one thing we discovered in this analysis, and we come back later how this one-form symmetry affects the computational capability. So the, in summary, in this talk, I like to somehow study the, these kind of symmetry. So the, of course, the global symmetry and the fractional symmetry, but what we like to study is the essential subsystem symmetry made by three kinds and one form symmetry. And technically, as I explain soon, the, there are three kinds of the subsystem symmetry. First one is we call the ribbon here, in the sense that the, this, you have the extensively many such symmetry, but the difference between ribbon and cone is for cone, it touches essentially the both ends, but you know, the whole ribbon visually, you know, it only somehow touches one direction, okay? So it doesn't touch. Phrased differently, essentially this range doesn't depend on the circumference end, okay? So this is more localized, the pattern, and this is extensive. And the third one is obviously different from the former two, and the, it's fractal, for example. And the, what we will somehow look at in this study is we consider all SPTO states which commute with this exotic subsystem symmetry. So this is how we define cluster phase. Okay, so the cluster state satisfies this property, and using symmetric constant depth quantum circuit, we can define a phase of matter which commutes with all these exotic symmetry, okay? And the, as I emphasize, technically, all I'm going to explain is the, essentially in how we can somehow see the property of the cluster tensor, because we know that the, how we can deal with the additional tensor by the constant depth symmetric circuit. So the following analysis focus on the essentially the difference in terms of the subsystem symmetry, but we know how we can somehow, you know, essentially respect this difference, and that's, you know, eventually I'm going to show.
I have a question. Is this like a complete classification of all possible symmetries?
Just examples? I have some evidence these are complete, but that's what I'm going to tell you. So,
okay.
Yes. At least for Archimedean lattices, we studied exhaustively, and we have only four patterns. Okay, so that's what we saw in 2D cases. And the, in principle, the first thing you may wonder is, well, how we can find this subsystem symmetry. For the cluster state, we can somehow, you know, analyze efficiently, because as I said, we know each tensor, and the, each tensor follows certain rules, so you can somehow write down the tensors, and if you think of it, essentially these somehow different lattice gives you different Klee-Hod quantum Seller automaton. You know, because of course, you know, the cluster state is made by the quantum phase gate, and so the, if you somehow the little bit reordered, essentially you will get the Klee-Hod circuit. And since the lattice is the, you know, essentially translative, so the, you will get naturally periodic structure. So that's the reason we get Klee-Hod quantum Seller automaton here. And the interestingly, you know, that's the answer to your question. The people already classified the 2D quantum Seller automata completely, and it has been known that there are only three kinds. And I don't explain the detail how this classification was made, but answer is there are three kinds of the quantum Seller automata. First type is you may call the periodic, namely period of the Seller automata is constant, independent of circumference. And so the one example is like the, this circuit. So this is control phase. So the, if you start with the X, it becomes ZXZ, but if you apply one more time, it comes back to X. Okay, so that's periodic QCA. Next is the so-called glider, and naturally this Pauli operator glides. So the, in this case, if we start from the XZ, you can confirm it somehow shifts by one, and apparently period is proportional to the circumference. So the period is linear in system size n, and the last case is fractal. And the, you know, this is one example, and the essentially period somehow depends on the in the circumference, and this is not same as collider, okay, for example. And so that's kind of the evidence you may expect. Actually, there are three kinds of subsystem symmetries, and that's what we found. So there is one-to-one correspondence between Crewford QCA and subsystem symmetry for cluster phases. And actually, this is somehow the practical way to find subsystem symmetry I found, because you know, in general lattice, you have to really play around to find symmetry, in particular for the case of fractal symmetry, it's very exotic. But you know, if you want somehow write down the corresponding quantum circuit given the, you know, the cluster state, there's a systematic way to study it. So the, you know, you can start from the X operator, and you know that rule of tensors. They satisfy certain property. So if you somehow start propagating Pauli operator, whenever somehow you somehow propagate X operator, it somehow leaves a trace of X in the physical indices. And if you, sorry, if you keep doing, there's somehow pattern at the X left at the physical indices, and these are actually subsystem symmetry we found. Okay, so the, and I have to emphasize if you, you know, believe this one-to-one correspondence, of course, for Crewford stellar automata, you have 2n independent generator to characterize uniquely QCA. And the similarly for subsystem symmetry, you have to find 2n independent generator to define subsystem symmetry. So these are a little bit detailed, but very important later. So the, what we found is essentially the subsystem symmetry of a cluster phase guarantees a common Crewford QCA structure, because the, essentially there is one-to-one correspondence, and the, that's kind of the, how we analyze. So the, do you know how long do I have?
Let's see.
Like the 10 minutes including?
Yes, this? We are, you have, I mean, we're going to be 15 minutes over time if you take 3 more minutes. Yes. Maybe people are used to drinking their coffee very fast. So
okay.
Three to 5 minutes. You have 3 to 5 minutes.
Okay. So the, you know, the essential, this is a summary slide of the, you know, what we found. So the, we somehow essentially proved that the old ground state in a 2D cluster phase on a 2D arithmetic lattice with three kind of subsystem symmetry, cone, fractal, and ribbon are universal because essentially they somehow comes with certain Crewford quantum stellar automata, and the, essentially that's how prove it. So the, we first somehow classified the, these three subsystem symmetry using the QCA. And the for arithmetic lattice, essentially we have either cone or fractal, and the ribbon doesn't appear on the arithmetic lattice. Interestingly, there are two lattices which has one home symmetry. One is Kagome lattice, and the other is 3-12-12 lattice. And the, maybe we somehow go quickly to this lattice and see why somehow this doesn't work. So the, I have, you know, the lot of the analysis here, but you know, the essentially, you know, all somehow goes similarly. Why, you know, the, you know, and we have essentially proof of universality. You know, I know it's too quick, but maybe, you know, we have the beautiful analysis of the quantum QCA. You know, the, yeah, right. But anyhow, the interesting is actually the one.
You have 5 minutes. Okay, just get some extra time, and you choose which slides you want.
Yeah, well, no, I'm fine. So the
you are fine, but we are fine.
So the one home symmetry prevents you to do universal computation as a phase. And the reason is, in principle, what we did is, given this cluster state, so we can write down the corresponding Crewford circuit. But in this case, we have this triangle structure, which doesn't give you the unitary gate. And in this case, again, I emphasize all we can use is almost X measurement. Sometimes we slightly break it, but essentially the rule is what can you do with X measurement. And X measurement gives you parity measurement. over two wires. So the in this case, essentially this, you know, if you encode the quantum circuit onto the Kagome lattice, what you get is the sequence of the YY parity measurement. And you might think, well, this is actually the error correction code. Although it's not quantum one, but it's actually the essentially parity check so that it's repetition code. So the, in this case, this lattice can teleport a single qubit encoded in a repetition code. But apparently this lattice doesn't have capability to do the universal computation. So the apparently the, at least for the, in 2D case, this one-form symmetry is a little bit bottleneck to do computation, but as we know, the one-form symmetry may be used for the other purpose, namely the error correction. So that's I like to come back in the end. Before I conclude, I like to mention also the another avenue. So if you look at the SPTO, there are a lot of the extension of SPTO. One extension is so-called higher form SPTO. Namely, previously we look at the cluster state, but actually you can define the hierarchy of the SPTO in terms of the cohomology, although I don't really explain. And the one example of the higher form is the essential SPTO made by the three-body control-control phase. Okay, so the difference is now that this is again the joint eigenstate of stabilizers, but stabilizers are not Pauli operators anymore. So it's made by the X and control phase gate. So the new feature you found in this the higher order is the, of course, this is again universal to the computation, but the in contrast to cluster set, which requires also non-Pauli measurement or non Clifford element to do universal computation. Since somehow it only has the higher level of the gate from Clifford hierarchy, you can do the computation using only Pauli measurement. And also the another work, we can extend this model using the general three-body diagonal gate with three cocycle properties, and we can prove that all somehow renormalization fixed point on three Calabro lattice are universal for MVQC, as long as you have the non-trivial higher form SPTO here. Again, in this analysis, we only look at the fixed point, not the old state in the phase, but that's only, that's also the another avenue to look at the more exotic symmetry. The upshot I like to, bring up for this conference is essentially for 2D case, we kind of understood in the sense that we can somehow define computational phase of matter in terms of subsystem symmetry. And as far as we find the three kinds of subsystem symmetry, regardless of the details, at least they all are universal. And interestingly, however, the one-form symmetry appears in general, and that's probably key to understand how somehow these symmetry work together for general quantum computation, namely fault tolerant quantum computation. So the ambitious goal is to figure out fault tolerant cluster phase. Maybe somebody had already resulted this week, but there are a few challenges. For example, if we look at the 3D cluster state, we know that it comes with two different symmetry. One is the cone symmetry in 3D, and the other is one-form symmetry, if you look at the face-centered the tube structure already. And apparently, somehow, this comes with both universality and the natural error correction capability. And the, we don't know how we extend this scheme to do the computation in a phase consistently. Obvious challenge is, at least for the case of this computation in a phase, currently, we use infinitesimal rotation by slightly breaking symmetry. Okay, and but in the standard, the context of the fault tolerance, we have to discretize gate. Okay, so we somehow only protect the magic state, for example, and we don't know how we can reconcile, this challenge. Another avenue might be look for higher order SPTO, because as I hinted, if you look at the higher form of SPTO, you don't have to use the infinitesimally small measurement, namely the, you know, for example, this, the, you know, the SPTY mention is universal using only Pauli measurement. Okay. So the, in principle, if we know how we can somehow make Hall tolerant for CCZ and Hadamard, which is another set of universal gate, you know, there might be a way to somehow do Hall tolerant cluster phase computation. So that's kind of the, my thought, and I'm happy to chat more during the workshop. Thank you for your attention.
Questions?
So I feel like I missed something basic. Why are you only considering symmetries that are products of X's? Why not also allow Z's and X's combined?
That's possible, but you know, it's kind of the, you know, Steve said, if you somehow, essentially if you consider stabilizers as symmetry, you completely fix the state.
Yeah.
So you like to leave the Hue freedom, and the natural way to somehow do is essentially symmetry only made by X. Then you have the room somehow. And essentially, you have the still family of state. But as you are saying, in principle, you can somehow.
So in principle, you could just kind of pick any rule.
Yes,
and
I think
looking
so.
Looking for symmetries that obey that rule.
Right, but if we only consider the symmetry made by X, it's naturally related to the lattice structure. So that's what we look at.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on my own previous question.
Uh-huh.
I just realized. So if we are just talking about onset symmetries, then there's always a way to that. I'd rather have turn it as a sum of terms, then there's always a way of choosing each term to be symmetric under the onset symmetry. If it's a something like translation symmetry, it's not. It's basically not possible.
Uh-huh.
But. I think now I appreciate better the definition for the onset symmetry in terms of onset symmetry SPT in terms of quantum.
Okay. Okay.
But I also have a question here. So you mentioned subsystem symmetries are good for universal measurement-based quantum computation. There's also literature discussing the relation between subsystem symmetry and the fractons.
You said fracton.
Yeah.
Yes.
We are there. Is the essence more of the fractonic aspect, or for the universal quantum
computation,
or more of the subsystem symmetry aspect?
I think this is a general question I have. So the, you know, subsystem symmetries are kind of exotic general symmetries, and we start to realize there are a lot of use. Why somehow, you know, the essentially as you mentioned, the more somehow the useful error correction of the fracton was this, you know, essential confinement of excitation. And the new use I'm talking about is the, you know, the essential use for the computation in the context of measurement-based computation. And as, you know, the Steve Bartlett hinted, you know, essentially we like to combine the symmetry property, you know, for example. So the one direction you might think is, you know, that we might have kind of good symmetry enriched topological orders to do something interesting. So these are all thoughts, but you know, I don't have answer to direct answer to your question.
All right. In the interest of time, let's move all further questions into whatever is left of the coffee break, which is not much. Apologize. Let's thank our speaker again, both speakers of this.